Cleveland Custom Car Care.
All right, good morning and welcome. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. Sarah, how has the heat wave been?
Ooh, it's brutal.
It is. It is warm outside.
I am not a fan of the heat by any means. Now, I like it more than the cold.
Sure.
But, I mean, these temperatures, it's hard to enjoy it whenever it's like heat index of 105 or 108. Yeah. It's just miserable.
It has been just so unbearable out
there. Yep.
And it looks like we're going to hang on to this probably for the next at least 30 days, if not maybe a little bit longer.
And we keep getting teased with all of these storms that keep moving through, and it's cooling things down, and you're like, hopefully this will stay. But it's like just a couple hours later, it just shoots right back up.
I think it was probably last weekend or possibly the weekend before, you know, it was pretty muggy out there, got a nice little storm come through, and then the sun came out after the storm, and
it made it even worse.
Oh, yeah, you were swimming out there. It was unbelievable. But thankfully, knock on wood there, hopefully your air conditioning systems out there have been hanging in there good and doing what they need. I actually have gone to the extent, you know, I like to have some backups and some redundancies. Stacy and I, our little one, Brindley, obviously has got some medical needs. So I keep an additional small window unit that I could put just in her room just to keep her comfortable and whatnot. Thankfully, we haven't had to use it. But just in case, I like having the little backups there to where we're in good shape. Our vehicles have fared pretty good so far. We've got one of the kids' vehicles. The AC has been a troublesome challenge to get fixed. Of course, it's an import. It's a Kia is what she drives. So got to get to the bottom of what's going on with that one and get her back in the cool, nice air conditioning. So that's on my to-do list. But we got some stories over there, Sarah. Do we want to just jump into a couple of stories?
We do, and we have a bunch of listener questions and comments as well. Last week we talked about oil changes and quick lubes and all of that.
Yeah.
Now, one question that we had is, which kind of falls in that same category, if you will, is a new transmission fluid change worth doing if it doesn't include a new filter? And this person has a 2008 E150.
Okay, that's an awesome question. I probably say that about every question, but this is one I think there's a lot of like maybe old or bad information out there. It really depends on how long it's been in the intervals of changing the fluids. So I do a lot of fluid exchanges without doing filters because I'm going to do them at a decent mileage interval. So what I mean is, I know off the top of my head, I think General Motors, the 2016 Arcadia body style, GMC, all those 3.6 liter V6 engines, they want their transmission fluid changed every 40,000 miles, which is a much narrower interval than a lot of other ones out there. Some of them say every 60,000. If you're doing towing or hauling, I don't know if you do a lot of that with this E150, you'll want to do it a little more proactively, so probably in that 40 to 50,000 mile range. So long story short, if you're doing it in a decent interval, no, it is worth doing. It's not a necessity to do a filter exchange at the same time. A lot of what happens is not just debris in the system that causes issues, but the fluid starts to break down and then the fluid doesn't do its job as well. So if you evacuate all the fluid out or you do an inline transmission cooler line service where you expel the nasty fluid out and then the machine feeds good clean fluid in there, that is a huge benefit to that transmission. And Sarah, if you don't mind me getting off on a soapbox story rant here, maybe rant's not the right word. So I've got a great friend of mine. He's a friend of the shop. He travels the country. Mr. Johnny, if you're out there, hopefully safe travels. He and three or two of his buddies went on and all bought F-350 pickups and did the services or lack thereof. And his other two buddies, if I remember the story correctly, you know, within 200,000 miles, they both had to put transmissions in their trucks, which is the same truck he had. Now, last I remember, he is still running on the factory transmission in the truck, and knock on wood, has never had any issues with it. But he allowed the services, or had us do the services throughout the life of that truck to make sure that it protected the transmission. So in my experience, if you're not having any issue, you need to service the fluid every so often. Because the alternative is you run it anywhere from 150 to usually a little over 200,000 miles, and then you get to buy a transmission at that point in time, and then new fluid obviously comes along with it. But the regular maintenance, just a fluid exchange, even without a filter, infinitely extends the life of the transmission. Do I recommend doing filters? Absolutely. So typically what I try and do is every other service, I do an inline or an in-pan transmission filter. I evacuate the fluid out. I change the filter. I fill it back up. I run it with a cleaner in there that loosens everything up, and then I do a fluid exchange, but I do that every other time. Sarah, did any of that make any sense? I feel like I went way out around the block to answer that question.
Didn't make sense to me, but I'm sure this person will know.
I hope so.
And if not, just text back in.
Exactly. Or call one of the stores. You know, I've got awesome people at, you know, answering the phones. Real people here in America. That will answer any of your questions. Typically what they'll tell you is they need to take a sample of the fluid before we make any recommendations. Just that's kind of, you know, the feel, see, smell, you know, make sure we get all the information we can before we recommend any service going forward.
All right. We've got about 4 minutes until we have to take a break. So hopefully you'll be able to answer this one.
I'll do my best.
I will also, next segment, I'm going to try to go hunt down Nick Reed because he has a question.
Awesome.
And these two kind of go hand in hand, same topic, if you will. So hopefully you can answer this one. Carbon fiber wheels, they are popping up in newer vehicles like the Mustang Dark Horse.
Yep.
What do you know about them?
Well, so it's carbon fiber is ridiculously strong and ridiculously lightweight. Very, very impressive. Now, are most tire shops able to deal with those wheels? No, because our machines, and A1 Custom included, are not set up necessarily to handle those non-metallic wheels. Where they really shine is that weight reduction. I mean, it's an amazing, you know, where, give or take, depending on the car, anywhere from 20 pounds, maybe up to 50 pounds on a truck, say, is what a wheel weighs. I bet those carbon fiber wheels, if I had to make a wild guess, they're probably under 10 pounds each. So huge weight reduction, fairly robust, but where I see them really lack is if you do take a good shock, say you curb a vehicle or anything like that, they won't deal as well with that as an aluminum wheel or a steel wheel, which you can bend versus carbon typically rips or tears or fractures. And so it's a good option. I would assume it's going to be more on your higher end, more like, I don't want to say supercar, because I, you know, the Mustang Dark Horse, not really a supercar, but it's kind of flirting with that. They're cool. I don't know that I would really love them for my lifestyle. You know, if I accidentally curb a wheel, I don't want it to break and fracture. And, you know, it could be a breakdown out there. So very cool. Like if it was your Sunday driver car, or, you know, you're taking it to, you know, Steak and Shake for the cruise ins and, you know, anything like that. I don't know that I'd want it for a real high miles an hour either.
Are these considered like new? Because I don't think that I've heard that much about them.
No, it is definitely something.
So
I don't know that
they're not common either.
I was going to say in person, I probably have never even seen one that I can remember. Even driving around town, pretty infrequent. But they're doing some really cool things with plastics and carbon fiber. I actually ordered a 3D printer that's going to be here
this
week.
Oh, did you?
And I'm seeing a lot of shops actually use them, which was my motivation to make like water outlet housings that you can't buy anymore, or different switches or air snorkels if you need one that turns a different direction. So it was on sale. I can't pass up a deal, I guess.
You love a good sale.
I do love a good sale. I'm not bashful. But thankfully, my sister and brother-in-law are like, super experts on it. So hopefully they'll kind of work us through that. But the new stuff's coming down the pipe, so you better embrace it. But Sarah and I are up against a break. We'll be right back after this.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back. We got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. We have a very, very special guest.
Don't know.
It's extremely, this is a big day.
Don't.
This is a big deal. This is huge. This is hard-hitting interview right here.
Quit it.
We're going to get, no, just kidding. How is Mr. Nick Reed doing today?
Awesome.
Good.
I'm honored to be here.
Hey, we love having you here. I've taken amazing amounts of... I don't know whether you know it or not, but, you know, you always have this really awesome way to, like, slide in, hey, you know, this would work really good on the show. So I appreciate that over the years, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well,
it's,
you know,
it's been a big deal.
It's just natural.
It's almost like you do this all day.
It's natural. Totally natural.
So earlier, I'm going to get us back on track here.
Thank you. We yep. need supervision.
We can talk about me some more.
Adult supervision.
Earlier, Nick was telling me about a trip that he went on, and he had some serious tire issues.
Uh-oh.
And he said, you know.
Well, are do I even need to be? You're
no,
just
you do.
Explain
he's like, well, I have a question for Dustin. Oh. And I said, well, why don't you come in and ask it? And then he's like, I'm scared. And I'm like, don't be scared.
That's exactly how it played out.
It is.
I'm like, no, I'd be too nervous.
I've never been on the radio before.
You're way too nervous.
So did you have a good trip?
Yeah. It was just to the lake.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So this was last Saturday, a week ago. And we're on 14 between Clever and Nixa.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
where that Delaware access
is? You were right by my house there.
Okay.
If you had
no
a
kidding.
Problem, you should have just got my roadside service right
Well,
here.
We didn't. Well, one, I think I did know. You live just south of there a couple miles. No,
yep.
I've never been to your house, but you've referenced about where you live, so I do recognize that. Well, we were going over that bridge, and there was a loud, like, we hit something.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, anytime that happens, my first thought is, oh, no, the tires.
Mm-hmm.
And I look in the rearview mirror, and I don't see anything in the road, nothing whatsoever. So we're like, oh, okay. Well, then we get to 13, and, like, right when you first turn south there, there is, I guess it's relatively new. I never noticed it before, Dollar Tree.
Uh-huh, yes.
And we pulled in there to get some serving spoons because of this event we were going to.
Sure.
And my wife goes in, and I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden the little alert comes up, and it says that the my tire has 9 PSI.
Oof.
And then 8, and then 7, and then nothing.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, so I thought, okay, well, I'll just put the donut on it and then drive it to, because I could feel where the air was coming out, and it was in the middle of the tread. So I thought, okay, good. They probably patched this, which was done. Well, I had referenced to someone telling the story. I said, yeah, we just bought those tires new 3 weeks ago. And so someone's like, well, they should be covered in warranty. And I thought, well, one, I didn't know if they were. If they were, does it cover something like that? And if they do, is it even worth, I got it patched. Is that secure enough to where it's like, it doesn't even matter. You don't really need to have replacements anyway.
So that typically is referred to as road hazard. And clearly you picked up a road hazard of some kind in there that punctured it.
Right.
And so the way that works is, and I'm speaking kind of a little general for most shops out there, is if it can be patched and a good quality, you know, MoDOT approved or standard repair will fix it. Typically, the patch is covered, and we do that as part of our road hazard. And if it can be, no, that's perfectly fine. That's a good approved approach. If it's right in the middle of the tire, that's really where, you know, the repairable portion of the tire is. Once you start to get to the outer portion of the tread as it rolls over the sidewall, then I can't repair it anymore. It should not be repaired by anybody. And then obviously the sidewall, you should not have repairs there as well. But no, if it was able to be repaired, that's a very adequate fix. The only time it's not is when I see the puncture get too large.
Okay.
So occasionally I'll get one that's ripped or I can see that it's broken some of the belts in the tire. And then at that point, that's where the road hazard will kick in and we'll do a tire replacement on it. But if you're able to get a good repair done on it, that's perfectly fine. I would keep tabs of where that tire is on the car. So like if you do a rotation and it moves somewhere, I would probably be a little bit more attentive to that tire, if you will, the fact you've got a tire pressure monitor system on there helps you big time.
Well, that actually leads to my second question. As I'm sitting there and I see, because we have the little display that comes up and it's like, oh, your back passenger side tire is losing air. And I get out and walk over and I was like, well, that looks fine. And then I notice actually it's my back driver's side. So is that with those sensors? Do you just switch the tires or why is that happening?
So I don't know whether we did that or not, but if we did, I have to own that. We typically, when we go through and move them around, now the beautiful thing about cars is none of them are the same. So if it's a Ford, Chevy, Dodge, Toyota, Hyundai, the relearn process is different. But long story short, whenever we move the tires, I have to relearn it and tell the left front is here now, right. The right rear is here, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's a little extra process that needs to be taken care of during a tire rotation. And so yours, for whatever reason, either didn't take because they are finicky little animals, and or two, it just didn't go through and get done like it needed to where it ID'd the correct location of the tires.
Well, I'm not going to worry about it until I have it in again.
Yeah, well, we
need to definitely
do that.
Doesn't really warrant a special trip.
Well, it takes anywhere, depending on how the system's feeling that day, anywhere from about 5 minutes, maybe up to 20 minutes. So it is a little bit of a process to get it in, learn, and then go through and make sure it takes it, and then it's in good shape. So nothing too bad.
See how learned I am now.
It changes so fast. It's amazing when I continue. You know, I've been going to these trainings and schools. Heck, you know, you've seen me, and we've talked about it many times for, you know, the last 20 years. We've actually got a tech going this week for some extended education in Kansas City. But if you're not committed to it all the time, you will get behind very, very quickly.
Right. Well, I feel safe.
Well, good.
That's all I needed to know.
So did you get the spare on there? Wasn't no big deal. Yeah. We're able to get it taken care of.
Yeah. In fact, it's funny. So while I'm doing that, and it was very hot, of course, and I was just very grateful that I noticed it while in the parking lot and not halfway down there because there's, and being on the driver's side, I probably would have had someone tow because people get hit all the time.
Oh, yeah. It's unreal.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, I don't want to do that. But there was a guy, he came over and was like, do you guys need any help? I was like, no. I was just jacking it up at that point. And he's like, oh, you have to forgive me. He goes, he was a firefighter or something else. And he goes, just my nature, try to help people.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he was actually visiting family, I think his daughter or something, because they were from out of town, Columbia, I think he said. Mm-hmm. But I realized after a while his wife was inside, and he was just, I think he was kind of bored.
Yeah.
But so he stood and talked with me for a while and everything. Yeah, but got it on, got it off. And it was, all good, all fine. My hands were dirty. That was about it.
Well, thank goodness the spare. A, you had a spare.
Yeah.
Because a lot of vehicles don't come with spares anymore. And B, you had the ability and the tools and equipment in there to do it. And you were in a parking lot. I think you bring up a very good. I stop and I'm kind of that guy that, you know, makes small talk or helps every so often. And
you hover, don't you?
I do. I change a lot of tires for folks.
Well, and honestly, I couldn't, because my wife said, when was the last time you changed tires? Actually, it was when she was in high school, I think it was the last time I changed tire.
Well, that's
great. So that was 2 years ago. No, I'm kidding. but I remember, and it was on I-44 in the middle of the summer after a funeral. So I was in a suit. It was miserable. But I just, for some of the real simple things, as I was jacking it up, he goes, did you loosen it up yet? And I was like, you know what? Actually, no, I haven't. Because, you know, otherwise it'll spin on a little bit. And so some of those little tiny things. So actually I was glad. I mean, nothing catastrophic, I'm sure, would have happened. But I was glad he was there to ask me that question because I said, no, I didn't even think of that.
It makes a big difference. And occasionally I'll get calls from customers. You know, they'll get everything off. But with aluminum wheels and a steel-faced hub, they will kind of corrode and seize together. So. Yeah. Hopefully yours wasn't stuck on there too bad.
No,
it just
they weren't.
Off.
It was right off. It was easy.
That's awesome. Yeah. Good, good, good.
All right. Well, thanks.
All right. Very good.
Thanks.
Well, you can go run and do your program duties if you would want.
I'm going to go act busy.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, Nick. I think that brings up a lot of great points out there is, you know, thankfully, hopefully we don't have that happen too often. And if you do, there are a few little mechanic, procedures. Definitely, to Nick's point, helps for the wheel to be down on the ground and be as stable as possible for you to generate as much torque as possible to get all the lug nuts broken loose. That's something a lot of folks don't do. They get it jacked up, even if it's on the rear or the front that's during or incorporated in the transmission, depending whether front or rear wheel drive, there still is torque lost because the wheel will move a certain amount before it gets to the locked position. And so you want to generate as much torque as possible, break the lug nuts loose, then raise the vehicle up on a safe, you know, level ground. Nick, being in an asphalt parking lot, was probably hot and unpleasant, but at least it was a good, stable, safe, relatively flat area to get the vehicle jacked up, get the tire changed, and then get the new one, the donut, on there and head back out. You definitely want to know whether you have a full-size donut or, you know, hopefully make sure it's inflated as well. One of the things I see a lot of people not do is if it's a front-wheel drive car, the standard procedure, if it's on the front, is to rotate one of the rear tires from the back to the front and then put the donut on the rear.
I didn't know that.
It helps the transmission run at the same rotational speed. I won't say that it'll like damage the car, but if you're driving on it for high speeds or very long, you want a matched set of tires on whatever transaxle, whether it's front or rear. So it's one of those things not a lot of people, I think, put out there. And so I see them running around town sometimes. I'm like, you know, probably ought to get it
in the
shop. Yeah,
I see that often, too. Well, and I didn't know that.
As well, if it's all-wheel drive, you need a matching size spare. So for simplicity's sake, if you have a 31-inch tall tire, then you want a 31-inch tall spare, which is harder to house and, you know, keep in the back or wherever underneath the vehicle, package tray, etc. But you need to make sure that you have the same radius or diameter size tire to make sure it's in good shape to where you don't have any issues. But we're down at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Springfield's Talk, 104.1 KSGF. We'll be right back after this.
Your complete car care solution, A1 Custom Car Care.
All right, welcome back. You've got Sarah and Dustin, A1 Custom Car Care. You know, I think maybe we, I don't want to say we're gloom and doom, but the last couple of 3 years has kind of been some gloom and doom in the car market. But have you driven by any new car dealers lately?
It's been a while, but I've noticed slowly but surely there's a little bit more inventory making its way onto the lot.
So I drive by, and they're not an endorsement of the show. This is just, you know, what I see as I drive by. But I drive by the Ford and Chevy dealer out in Republic quite often, and I've done quite a bit of business with both of them over the years. Definitely the Chevy dealer, for sure. But I've noticed they have more inventory, more new inventory. The Ford dealership had quite a bit of new inventory, it looked like. As well as, you know, I'm trying to pay attention, and this is all makes, all models. You know, the last several years, they were getting pretty much asking price, or MSRP, if you will, or even over MSRP. And that made it a very difficult market for, you know, the consumer, you and I out there, to buy a used or a new car, especially a new car. And you were paying through the nose for used cars. But I'm seeing $4,000 under MSRP, $5,000, $10,000. It's starting to shift from the seller's market over to the buyer's market a little bit. And I don't think we've definitely seen the bottom. I think we talked about it a few, it's probably been right at a month ago. You know, I bought a new to me truck, or signed on the dotted line for a new to me truck, if you will. But this particular truck is a 16 Duramax. I really like it. But I have been looking for like 3 or 4 years to get a deal on a truck. And, you know, I just didn't want to sign $80,000 or $90,000 for a truck. It just, it seemed insane to me.
I don't blame you. And average car payments, we talked about this, I don't know, a couple times, but the average car payment is like $717 or something ridiculous like that.
Yep. And that's for, you know, the average. So if I bought an $80,000 truck, even if they split it up over, say, 10 years, I mean, that's a lot of payments, a lot of interest. a lot of sales tax, a lot of property tax, taxes, taxes, taxes. I know I get on my soapbox for taxes from time to time, but I'm just about to have to go pay property, or I'm sorry, sales tax on that new to me truck.
Oh, yes.
So that's, you know, I was working on my cousin's vehicle here a little while back, and part of me looking up the specs on the car was the license plate number. It's kind of a cool feature we've got. And she was there, and she's like, those are, I forget, she had the number, like $3,800 license plates. And I looked at her like, what are you talking about? And then it hit me that that's exactly what she had to pay for the sales tax on her new RAV4 was $3,800 to get those license plates.
Isn't that ridiculous?
It is unbelievable. I mean, typically, you know, I try to put as little money down as possible, not because I just want to not put any money down, but I know I got a sales tax,
right?
You know, smacking me in the face that I've got to pay, you know, and that's several thousand bucks. And as well as I was switching things over from my old truck to my new truck, I'm like, this is a lot of work. I do not want to get a new vehicle anytime soon because it's so much doggone work. But I'm very thankful to have a little later model, a little less miles on the odometer, my last one. And it sold really quick, actually. Put it up on the old Facebook Marketplace and had a gentleman out of, I think, Diamond come and pick it up. Mm. And I was really surprised at how quick that one ton sold. I thought I would sit on it a little bit. But it was a pre-emissions one ton, so it didn't have any of the troubles that the later model ones. So I think that's probably why the gentleman was looking for it. And really, I can't think of anything that that truck really needed other than it was just getting really, you know, a lot of miles, and I didn't want to have any issues with my little one or Stacy in the truck when we were using it, or less issues. New vehicles break down too, but one of those things, I just wanted a few less miles. And I did get a couple of creature comforts, if you will. This truck has power windows and locks.
Whoa, really.
That's
moving up in the world.
Big deal for me. My last one, it had manual windows and locks. About the only like luxury item is it had air conditioning. But when I would get in or have to lock it up, I would have to go around to every door and unlock or lock every door. So this one's kind of, this one at least has the power locks and windows. Still vinyl floor, which I really, really like. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I hunted, and honestly, getting that deal on that truck, I bet I spent roughly a month negotiating with the dealership to try and get what I considered a fair deal for me and them. And hopefully they did fine on it. I don't want the dealership to lose money. I need them to stay open. They were great to deal with, by the way. It was Mitchell's in Aurora, smaller dealership, really. Got good service out of them. But, yeah, we kind of haggled back and forth a little bit on that one. So definitely very, very thankful for that. I've already taken it out to Wichita and back once.
And it did good?
It did good.
Oh, good.
I also hauled two F-150s on my trailer back, so I look kind of like a hillbilly, you know, hauling two trucks on the back. But, you know, that's really what I got it for, is a working truck, you know. Whatever your lifestyle is, whether it's just a commuter car or, in my case, where I'm hauling quite a bit, it worked out really good. It was fantastic. I got some looks as people were like, what in the world is this guy doing with two F-150s? But I've got a couple good deals on them, so I got to fix them. You know, I got to save them one F-150 at a time. Or two in this case, I suppose. You think it's crazy?
Are you running out of room in your field?
Not yet. I'm definitely running out of grace with my lady, Stacy. So thank you if she does ever listen to the show. Yeah, we've got a few out there that I'm working. I think I have four F-150s right now that I'm working through doing some repairs and getting them back on the road.
How many do you have in your field currently? Just curious.
I'm not trying to throw you under the bus. Why would you ask that question?
No, I was just genuinely curious.
I don't know. There's probably 20 or so out there, give
and
or take.
Some of them are probably parts vehicles.
Yep.
Okay.
So
see, look, I'm not throwing you under
that.
The bus.
I appreciate that. So I keep like spare vehicles. So my mom's Trailblazer has got a little over 300,000 on it. So for years, I've kept a spare Trailblazer there, and we pick off parts from it from time to time. And then as she goes to something else, I'll scrap that thing and get rid of it. She's also got an older F-150, so I have another one of those that I had bought. We took a bunch of parts off of it, kept her F-150 on the road. We did a whole bunch of work to that earlier this summer. And she's able to drive for many years at this point with no car payments, and so I kind of keep an extra. So the Trailblazer, I think, the parts Trailblazer I got I want to say I gave $230 for this parts Trailblazer. Mice had eaten up the wiring harness on it, so I have a good engine, transmission, and the body parts for her, which I have used on her Trailblazer to keep it going. The F-150 got in a wreck probably about maybe 7-8 years ago now, and I bought another F-150 for $100 and took all the parts off of it, and then I pick parts off of it from time to time when I need it. So I like having some redundancies. I know I talk about that a lot, but, you know, we're getting to the point that, you know, sometimes it's a small part that breaks that sidelines your vehicle, and it's still a good vehicle, but you can't get parts or you can't, keep it on the road. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I don't know how long my mom's had that Trailblazer, but I know she's put probably well over 200,000. I think it had like 130 on it when she got it. And I really like having a backup and pretty much everything. So that's why I have some of the vehicles, and then the others are in process of being kind of rehab. So we got one more break. Sarah and I are going to step into this. We'll be right back after that.
Your complete car care solution. A1 Custom Car Care.
All right. Welcome back. We got just a little bit of time left. Sarah, have you got another car loan story over there?
I do, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the MSRP that you were talking. Well, yes and no. So car loans are getting tougher to get, and more people are getting rejected by lenders. That's the name of this title from Car and Driver. And it's going to get real technical, so try to stick with me here, because it throws out a lot of numbers in this. But the supply of new cars, trucks, and SUVs on dealer lots isn't as sparse as it was a few years ago, but there's an important sign in the consumer data that shows vehicle shopping in the United States isn't as easy as it could be. The culprit? Credit problems.
Yeah.
The Federal Reserve tracks loan application data, including how often lenders turn borrowers down. Now, the Fed recently released a new batch of information that found that the overall rejection rate for loan applications was 21.8%. Now, that's pretty big jump.
Yeah, because it seems high.
It is. So for auto loans, it jumped 14.2% in June, which is up from 9.1% in February. That's a 9% jump, and it puts auto rejection rates at their highest level since the Fed started collecting this data in 2013. Would-be borrowers, this is where we get a bunch of numbers, so stick with me here. Would-be borrowers saw their applications for other loan types rejected at an increased rate, too. 21.5% of credit card applications were rejected, for example, along with 30.7% of credit card limit increase request, 13.2% of mortgages, and 20.8% of mortgage refinance applications. The Fed said that the overall rejection rate for all credit applications was almost 22% in June, the highest level in over 5 years. The Fed said all age groups saw an increase in rejections, but the highest rejection rates were among people with sub-680 credit scores. The reason for the increased rejections can be found in the broader economy, especially the inflation of the last few years, and the fact that rising interest rates have increased the amount of debt people have. Lenders are worried about borrowers being unable to pay, and with good reason. Analysts at Cox Automotive noted last month that auto loan performance resumed deteriorating in May as delinquencies and defaults both increased for the first time in 3 months. So we're seeing a lot more people kind of struggling to pay their bills. The May delinquency ratio for auto loans, 1.7%, while the subprime car loan rate hit 6.5%, which was worse since 2006. And the default almost back to the highs of 2019. It may take a while before things get better. The Fed's recent numbers say that the average reported probability that an applicant will be rejected for an auto loan in the next 12 months is almost 31%.
Oh, wow.
So if you are out there looking to get a car loan, it might be a little bit tougher.
Yeah. And, you know, you're going to pay more for it. You look at what the interest rates are doing. I think that was part of your, you know, news story there. That it's, you know, I can remember not that long ago, you could get 60 months from, you know, whoever the manufacturer was at 0%. I mean, they were really incentivizing the sales of these vehicles, as well as I've noticed Tesla seems to be one of the, I guess, forward-looking companies. I think everybody knows that. But Elon even put out there to where he extended the loan payments, you know, from 6 years to 7 years, I think, because previously I think he'd been doing a five-year gig on his stuff. And you'll see a lot of the other manufacturers follow suit. Once somebody puts that out there and they're the first one, typically it's to spur sales. So if he's, you know, working with things or, say, other manufacturers, they're going to put out whatever incentives when the car market starts to slow or stagnate. And when I see Tesla, you know, move into that direction, the others typically will follow suit, and there'll be some deals to come. I guess out of everything we've talked about on the show today, the last several years we have been talking about how tough it is and how difficult it is to find a good car, find a good used car, even get inventory. The deck was not stacked in our favor as a consumer, but it's starting to swing in the other direction, other than the fact that it's going to be harder to get financing. So I was talking with Jonas, my boy. He's 14. He's going to be 15 here in a couple of months. And I'm trying to educate him on money and finances. And not that I'm always a, you know, beacon of what you should do. I've made my fair share of mistakes financially over the years, but I feel like I've done fine. I mean, I'm, you know, I can pay my bills and I can get credit if I need it, but trying to make sure he understands what the world's going to be like when he gets into it. Now, obviously, his first vehicle we're going to take care of, and it'll be an F-150, shocker for everybody out there. But it is red, so Sarah will be happy about that, I'm
happy.
Sure. But financing is going to be a big deal for anybody. And the, you know, the 99 or the 90s and the 2000s, that era was really a buyer's market. I mean, 0% for 60 months from a dealership. That's amazing. Now they're talking, what, I think 7, 8, 10, 12, 14% if they give you a loan. They're going to have to do something to spur sales. Otherwise, it's just they're not going to move any product, and they have to move their inventory. They cannot sit on it forever because it cost them to sit on that lot. So,
and from that article, which we had talked about it, I don't know, probably months ago at this point, that we were going to start seeing people default on their loans.
Yeah.
They were going to struggle to pay for their vehicles, and we're going to see a surplus in that used market. And I think we're going to start seeing it relatively soon.
Oh, yeah. It's coming. I would venture to say the summer will probably stay fairly steady or strong. But as we go into the end of everybody's fiscal year, whether it's in, you know, October, November, December, we are going to start seeing some of that they can't hold it back anymore and basically kind of prop up the house of cards, if you will. They're going to have to start letting some of the repos go. They're going to have to make some deals on the inventory that's been sitting around because they're not going to want to have 2024s on the lot when 2025s come out, etc. We've all played that game. And honestly, that's where a lot of the good buying opportunities come from. So I guess what Sarah and I, if I can wrap it up in a package of what we're trying to make sure, is that you guys are educated consumers out there. You need to know what's going on in the market. You need to know how to negotiate. And really, there is a big, it's worth learning how to, there's an upside to learning how to negotiate, whether it's for cars, whether it's for houses, et cetera. I'm not going to say I'm the greatest negotiator in the world, but I obviously know the automotive industry, so if I'm going to negotiate on anything, I have to be very rational and factual. I cannot be emotional. Did I want this new-to-me truck? Yeah. Did I want to just make a deal on it right out of the gate and say, hey, I'll take it, sign on the bottom line? Sure. But I slow-played it out there. Thankfully, the market had stagnated a little bit. Otherwise, that truck would have been sold, and they wouldn't have had to deal with me kind of trying to make sure that I was doing my due diligence. Selling a vehicle to an automotive mechanic, technician, whatever you want to call us, is probably a very difficult thing to do, especially a used one in this instance. I took it home and I went through it. I shook it down and I did find some issues that it needs, and I'm going to be, you know, rehabbing some of those items. And the negotiation reflected that. I was able to go through that process and build enough value in my favor that, hey, this thing is going to need some work, and we need to reflect that in the negotiation. And they had a good vehicle. I'm not saying it was a bad vehicle, by no means, but we had a good back and forth with it. They were obviously very seasoned in the automotive industry as well. And so we worked out and hammered a deal. Now, had this truck been, you know, 2 years earlier, they would not have had to work with me at all, because the next guy would have walked in, not even opened the hood, not even looked at it, signed on the dotted line, and went on about his day and not had to worry about any kind of negotiation. So the market is definitely going to be a much more in favor market than it has been the last several years, which is a great thing for you and I out there as consumers. What it's not a great thing is if, God forbid, something happens and you had a good interest rate or a good deal on a vehicle, and maybe you get in an accident or something catastrophic happens to it for whatever reason, and then you go and try and negotiate to, you know, replace that, you're going to have a harder time with the financing. So, you know, making sure your payments are made, et cetera, and you're crossing your T's and dotting the I's, and realize you're probably going to have a higher interest rate if you do get approved for a loan. I think that was the big thing out there. Are you in the mood to buy a new car at this point? Or are you still pretty soured from the last two car buying experiences?
So I will be purchasing a new vehicle probably. I don't want to say when, but mm-hmm. in the future, I sure. will. I'm not over the top in love with the vehicle that I'm driving mm-hmm. now, but it is a good vehicle. It mm-hmm. gets me to point A to point B. Has very little repairs that need to mm-hmm. be done or addressed. So I'm happy with it yeah. in that front. But maybe down the road, maybe I'll find something that's an SUV or even a little bit more roomy of a car yeah. and check off some of those boxes, and maybe a deal will pop up that, or an offer that you can't refuse, mm-hmm. you know? So maybe something like that will pop up.
Sure.
But until then, I kind of watch the market. I kind of browse things, but I'm not really looking to buy here in the future.
Well, that's honestly, that puts you guys in a good spot. Both of your rigs are pretty good shape. Very
yeah.
nice, serving the purpose. But as kind of life changes, different things change, it's nice to be able to adapt to some different transportation, if you will.
That's right.
Which, you know, is really usually what motivates my change, typically. I keep vehicles for a long, long time normally. This last one ton, I had it for many years, put a lot of miles on it, a lot of towing miles. So it really just kind of, as life kind of gives you lemons, you make lemonade, I guess.
That's true.
But definitely, you know, be an informed consumer, I guess. A lot of times, especially younger, I was just happy to get a vehicle. You know, if they would tell me yes, oh, I was just over the moon. Now, and that was a very emotional decision at that point in time, you know, and a lot of people buy off of, I like the wheels, I like the color, I like the stereo, I like the
right.
chrome, I like the whatever, fill in the blank there, versus, all right, we're going to be super practical. Is the vehicle worth it? What am I going to use it for? Is it going to cover the needs that I, you know, we've got several kids. Will it haul all the kids? Will it haul all the kids' junk? You know, will it haul all my junk? It's just, you really got to weigh that out. And the older I get, the more rational I get, the more practical, I guess. It's like, hey, I got to have something that's going to service our needs. But you're giving me the sign that says, yep. hey, we're out of time.
I know. Time flies when you're having fun. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're out there in Radio Land, you have a question or a comment for us, feel free to text us on the text line. That phone number is 417-447-5743, or you can reach out to us on our social media at 1041 KSGF. Dustin, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend.
You as well. Be safe.
Bye.